All right, welcome back. So hopefully you've had a chance to top up the coffee. Steve, number six or seven of the day for you?
It's number four.
Number four.
Come on.
You're way ahead of me, way ahead. All right, so I guess one of the first things I wanted to do was to just to step back into something that Steve was talking about, or actually I guess I was talking about it too, in the previous section. So I might just do a very quick demonstration just to fill in a gap there that I find that sometimes people have.
Is this the demo I forgot to give?
I wasn't going to put such a fine point on it. So, guys, Steve blew you off on a demo he said he was coming back to. Is that better?
It's a fair cop.
All right. So, let's switch back to my machine. I'm going to go in and do a quick demonstration for you. All right. So, one of the things that Steve showed was he showed you where he went in and he chose a couple of different builds. You went and assigned builds in the test plan. And something that testers may not be aware of is where do those builds come from? So I'm just into Visual Studio now. I'm going to go into the Team Explorer and pop open the builds panel here. Now, these are the builds that developers will have set up. They'll go in here, create new build definitions, and it wouldn't be uncommon to see a dozen or more individual builds here. You'll see the one that's shown here is the Knightly Fabricam build, but we'd probably have a continuous integration build, and we could have a build that includes a deploy. So we could do a build deploy test workflow. There could be plenty of different ones. Now, if you think about the number of different build definitions and then also the frequency with which those builds are happening, they could be, particularly with continuous integration, there could be 20, 30, 50 builds going on in a day. So what we want to try and do is we want to try and minimize the noise that the tester's seeing. So, for example, if I choose this build, okay, so this is the Knightly Fabricam, and if I pop in here and remove that date filter, straight away you'll see that on the 15th there were already 9 builds that day. These ones here that have failed to compile, or these ones here that some of the unit tests have failed on in this example, there's no point potentially in even letting a tester see them. Okay, so these other ones, well, these ones could be of more interest to the tester. So someone on the dev team usually will go in here, they'll have a look at the results of that build, and they can come up here and assign a build quality. They can say that they're reasonably happy with it, they could simply outright reject it, or they could say it's now ready for initial test. Now, really what that is, or the usage that I'm showing you at the moment, is just simply setting a flag there that in MTM, when Steve went in and was assigning a build, we can filter it to a particular build definition. And then further than that, we can also filter it for a particular quality indicator. So instead of getting 100 builds today and a heck of a lot of noise there, we can narrow that down to just the build definitions that testers are interested in, and then some build qualities here. This is something that you really want understanding from the development team of, so that there can be some good some good messaging communicated between the developers and the testers. Okay, so now that would have probably been the best demo that Steve would have done, but moving on past that, let's get back to some other content. All right, so in that last module, Steve went through and spoke about creating test plan properties and also configuring test settings. I'll take over for the second of this first part of this module, and I'm going to talk about defining configurations, creating test suites, and configuring test suites. So what the study guide says in this first area, and under the heading of defined configurations, what they want to test us on is our knowledge of managing configuration variables, how we can go and set default configurations, adding new configurations, setting the configuration state, and also deleting configurations. So let's see what we can do to bring us up to speed on each of those things. So in setting the scene, creating the picture for you, why do we have different configurations? Well, as testers, we need to test in a wide variety of configurations. So some of the configurations, what are some of the variables that we've got to deal with? As a tester, we might need to want to test the application with certain operating systems. You know, we want to run tests against XP, Windows 7, Windows 8. We want to run against different browsers, different versions of the browsers. Potentially, it could be different architectures. As testers, we want to test against 32-bit or 64-bit operating systems. It could also be that we want to test on different versions of IIS or maybe different database versions. It depends on the nature of the application. It could be a web application. It could be a Windows Form application. So there could be a lot of variables there. Now, this is an example of where the more the merrier doesn't hold true. That's horrible. You know, if you've got a nice, concise configuration, if you're very, very, I'll say lucky, and you're working with an application to be used inside your corporate environment where you have an SOE, a standard operating environment, where we know that the majority of the computers out there that we're going to be running on are all Windows 7 with IE 9 or 10. If we've got that really nice, clearly well-defined configuration, that makes the volume of testing significantly less for you. I'm not saying anything new there for testers. You're well aware of this. If it is, say, a public-facing web application, well, now your testing overhead, your testing effort has increased by orders of magnitude. Okay? Now, if that's the requirement, that's the requirement. There's no way around it. But needing to be able to track those configurations, if we've got a suite of a dozen tests, well, we might need to run those dozen tests on XP, on Windows 7, on Windows 8, and then against different browser versions on each. So that's just, you know, lots and lots and lots of testing there. All right.
Does it validate if I say I'm doing Windows 7 and I've got IE 8? Does it validate that when I run it?
I do not believe it does. So it doesn't validate it, but it will prompt us. It will give us clear indicators as to what we should be using. And then technically, with the data adapters you were talking about, the diagnostic adapters, system information will capture the browser information and will capture the operating system. So there is a series of checks and cross-checks there just a little bit. But when you select a configuration to, say, Windows 7, it won't magically make Windows 7 appear. Or warn you if that's not what you're using. They're more labels, aren't they?
They are.
All right, so moving on there. So how do we deal with different configurations? Over the years, there's been a number of different options. Depending on how long you've been in the industry, you might remember back to those wonderful rooms that you'd walk in, and there'd be these benches right around the outside of the room. And then you'd have these PCs set up, and above those PCs, you'd have a sheet of paper, and it'd tell you what that configuration was for that machine. And you'd walk in armed, typically with your manual tests under your arm, and you'd sit at the first computer and run through those tests in that configuration. You'd move off to the next computer and rerun those tests again and work your way around the room. Now, that was before the advent of good, reliable desktop virtualization, before we had maybe some better hardware on the desktop for running these things. So in the middle there, I've talked about a better solution now, is simply virtual machines available to the tester. So on my machine, I could be running any of the desktop virtualization providers, and I could have an XP machine running locally, and I could have a Windows 7 machine running locally and a Windows 8 machine running. And I can easily sit at my own desk, switch between those configurations and run through those tests. So that's a good solution and been a good solution now for quite a while. So then of the three different configurations, I've said that the third and the most ideal, that's when we really then get to take it to the next level. We're going to then leverage and utilize lab management. So it's going to take care of provisioning the machines for us. It's going to use server infrastructure behind the scenes, some good Hyper-V boxes, and I'm going to be able to say, well, look, I want to test with that machine, drag them into an environment and deploy. And that's going to go and provision exactly what I need. Now, you saw Steve go and create an environment earlier where he said, or created just a web server to go with his local machine. Now, these environments that I'm talking about, they can be 3, 10, they can be 20 machines. We could have clustered database servers in the environment. I mean, it's really just limited by the hardware you've got. So long as those machines are grunty enough memory, enough cores, then we can have quite sophisticated and large environments. And then they can be marked in use, and we can maintain state quickly and easily. So I can use snapshots. to set pre-state across multiple machines, which I think is great. Imagine a financial services type application. Well, I can have a snapshot across half a dozen machines that's brand new, and then preload a month of data and snapshot it again. Preload a year of data and snapshot it again. Now, this snapshot could be consolidation across any number of those machines in the environment, and then I can easily and quickly push those snapshots back down again, well, between every individual test run if you want to do that. So again, let's recap those configurations. Traditional, the benches around the rooms, then desktop virtualization, and then the final one is something like lab management, where the configurations are dealt with very, very well for us. All right, back to the slides for a moment. So in keeping track of those different configurations, historically, we may have maintained a list of our test cases. This could be something that we've done in Excel. It could be something that we've done on a piece of graph paper if you wanted to. We've seen our test cases, and then these are the configurations that we've identified that we needed to test against. We've gone in there and we've identified which tests need to be run in which configurations. So, for example, test case 46 uses or tests against AeroGlass. Now, that was something first introduced in Vista. So running those tests on any of these Windows XP machines makes absolutely no sense at all. Okay, so keeping track of the tests against the configurations they need to be run at, and then managing, well, not only what a default would look like, but managing those right down to the individual test case level is also a very common requirement. In dealing with those configurations, MTM does a really good job of doing that for us, or certainly providing everything we need to track those different environments, to manage the configuration variables for us. We can also, and I skimmed over that slide reasonably quickly. I'm going to demonstrate that shortly, so not a lot of time just on that one. It's possible for us to delete test configurations. You can delete test configurations, perhaps that we no longer require, maybe we created one incorrectly, maybe we don't need it anymore. But there is a caveat to that we need to be aware of. If a test configuration is referenced in a test result, or is a default configuration for a test plan or test suite, you cannot delete that configuration. That's really important for historical accuracy, that we can go back and we can see these configurations. You don't want to accidentally delete something that's used elsewhere. As an alternative, you can change the state of the configuration to inactive. And that's effectively a better choice. It sort of takes it off the list. It's invisible without being deleted. And there's quite a few things like that, I guess, across the testing suite. Inactive as opposed to deleting. We want to keep that historical reference accurate, the historical timeline correct. All right. So how about we move into some demonstrations now, and let's look a little bit more closely at managing those configurations. All right, down here. So again, I'm also using the freely downloadable virtual machine there. So it's affectionately known as the Keller VM. Would that be right, Steve?
That is.
You say the Keller VM and you know exactly what that is.
Or the Brian Keller VM for the full name, the fully qualified name.
Well, the Mr. Keller. Let's give him, let's talk him up a little bit. Where would we be without it? We'd all be madly creating our own VMs left, right and center and investing a lot of time. So in this particular virtual machine, I'm just going to go in and switch across to Organize for now. In Organize, I'm going to go to my Test Configuration Manager. And you'll see that out of the box, this particular VM includes these configurations that you see. Now, it's maybe not readily evident as to how these relate. These are the actual configuration variables. This is actually the friendly name that we choose to give it. Now, while these names are very descriptive and accurate, they're actually good names. There might be some better examples. Okay, so I'm going to go and say I want to create a new test configuration. And I'm going to call this configuration the MSSOE 4.6. All right, so the Microsoft Standard Operating Environment 4.6. You know, if that's the name, if we can relate to that within our organization, then that's fantastic. I might be wanting to go in there and call this the... Nice typing. I might call this the developer VM or the developer SOE. Or I might go and call it the kiosk. So, I mean, while the names, the samples that are shown are very descriptive about the particular values for those configurations, that doesn't need to be the case. So I can create, let's do it, SOE4, and I'll save that. And I can create another one and call it SOE5. So SOE4 is the one that's currently rolled out across the organization. SOE5 is currently in development. They're thinking about what the next version of that SOE is going to look like. So we could be running on Windows 7, and then we're going to start testing against SOE5, which will be based on Windows 8, let's say. Okay. Let's go back into SOE4, and I can go down here and choose my operating system. As I said, we might run with Windows 7 here, and I might choose to go and add a browser. And from the list of options here, well, I'll go with IE8. Where's IE9?
I don't know.
Or 10? All right, so we need to be able to configure this list of values as well. For now, I'll just choose 8 for the heck of it, and save out of there. If we go up the top here, you'll see we've got the ability to manage our configuration variables. I can go in there, and you'll see under Browser, this is where the list comes from. So I can easily go and I can borrow that bit of text there, type it here and throw a 90 on the end. Whoops, try that again, browser. I can go and drop it in, and we can also throw 10 in there as well and any other values that I want. I can go and remove these values, so perhaps we no longer need IE7. Let's give that a try, and away it goes. I can do the same for our operating systems. So let's go and add Windows 8 in there. But during the, you know, earlier in this particular module, I spoke about the fact that it doesn't have to be just operating system and browser, two of the obvious ones. I can say I want a new configuration variable. We also need to be able to test against 32-bit and 64-bit architectures. Or maybe we've got a Surface RT in there, so we'll throw an ARM chipset in there as well. It could be that I need to also test against certain versions of SQL. So let's test against 2008 R2, RF2, okay, that's new. Let me show you how you can edit these values. Much better. So again, these are the variables you can choose from. These are the values that are available to us. Now when I go ahead and save that, I'm going to pop back into SOE4. And you see that we can also now add CPU architecture and SQL server version. So I'll go and choose my architecture and say that this is a 32-bit version. And I can also go and say that we want to test against SQL 2008 R2. I can choose to save that. I can put in a meaningful description here. Now, in most cases, it should be self-evident down the bottom, but sometimes when we see this in a table, you'll see the name, and then you can see the description to the right of it without needing to open it up. So that's entirely up to you if you want to put the description in, but always probably a good idea. Over to the right, you'll see the state. And remember something, you know, one of the tips that I really liked from Steve a little earlier in one of the earlier modules was make sure you know the states pretty much for everything. You know, have we got active and inactive for configurations, active, inactive for test plans, test suites, test cases? What are the differences between them? I think that was a really good tip that Steve shared with us. So I'm going to choose to mark that active for now. But then when we move on to SOE5 and we no longer want to test on SOE4 anymore, I can switch that to inactive. Or potentially I could be moving forward and maybe I'm going to put SOE6 in there, but we're not going to start working with it yet. I want to go in there, create it, start, you know, filling it out with the values we expect will be the case, and then I'll mark it inactive until we're ready to use it. Something else that I'll also call out there is I can choose to go in there and I can say automatically assign this to new test plans. And in doing so, I can make that become the default. All right. So let me go ahead and save that again. Jump out of there. And close out of there. Go back to my test plan. Go into my properties. Now, this is the screen that Steve spent some time on earlier in the jumpstart. You'll see that he went through the settings at the top, worked his way through the builds. Over here, we saw configurations. And I can drop that configuration down, and you can see all of the available configurations now. I can go in there and say, well, look, in addition to that, I also want to work with SOE4, please. And I can now choose to apply that. So now this particular test plan, when I save it, has SOE4 and Windows Server 2008 and IE8, and any new test cases that I add will automatically assume both of those configurations. So again, that's another way of setting those meaningful defaults. All right, I think that's that section. Let's get back out of there. Pop back over and see what's next on the agenda. So we want to talk about creating test suites. What the study guide says. We want to be able to create query-based test suites. We want to be able to create requirements-based suites as well as static suites. So fundamentally, there are three different types there. We want to be very, very clear about what the differences are between those. We want to talk about copying test suites, creating a test suite hierarchy, and how we go about assigning test suite states. Okay? So, before I move into those different test suites, let's see how I've got this really, really great large screen monitor here. Let's see what I'm like. I already know the answer to this. I'm drawing on the screen with my fingers. All right. Even with a pen and a mouse, it's really, really bad. So this is just going to be entertaining. So, oh, look at this. This is great.
Whoa.
Well, that's kind of rectangular, kind of straight. Do you reckon these are bolted down, Steve? I could do with one of these at home. So I'm going to say that this is my test plan. Looks
it's legible.
It's legible. That'll do. Excellent. Maybe I should have some crayons here. So there's my test plan. Now my test plan is going to contain test suites. And there's no way I'm going to write suite in here, I'm sure. Hey, that kind of works. Okay, so we can have multiple test suites. And inside each test suite, we're going to have... How am I going to do this? We're going to have usually plenty of test cases. And I just wanted to show that hierarchy. Test plan contains test suites. Test suites contain test cases. And we also have our configurations defined. Okay, my fingers aren't good at little letters. All right. There we go. Well, I don't know whether that's actually improved anyone's understanding of anything or just embarrassed myself with my lack of graphic skills. So let me hide the evidence before anyone sees it. Ah, it's being recorded. Oh, well. So the different types of suites. There's something called a requirements-based test suite. Now, that groups test cases related to a specific requirement. And they're one of my favorites for sure. There's something called a static test suite. And static's an interesting term. It's kind of just a test suite that I choose to give a name to, and then I simply choose what test cases I want to put in there. Think of it like a file system. You know, you can go onto your C or your D drive. You can go in there and say, hey, I want to create a folder called banana. I mean, you get to name it. And then you choose what files you want to put in there. Much like the file system, I can right-drag a file in and I can choose to copy it in, So a file can be in multiple folders. I can choose to move it in there and, you know, basically have that only appear in one particular suite. I've got some flexibility there. And then our last one there is a query-based suite. And a query-based suite basically means that I can define a filter, I can define a query, and any test cases that match that filter will then automatically appear in that particular test suite. Now I'm going to demonstrate creating all three of those as we go forward. You want to be able to convey your test suite state information. Again, getting right back to what Steve said. Hey, look, that's so much better than my finger drawing. Have a look at that. I should have just jumped forward. Would have been a lot less embarrassing. So
it was well worth it.
I thought you'd like it. So what you see here, with a little bit more graphic flair and panache, because, you know, I just drag boxes around, is our test plan, that large container. And here are our test suites that contain test cases there. Okay. And look at that, I'm really not much better even with the mouse. So here's a test suite. Now, that number 7 there, that's going to be a work item for sure. So that's spelling out to me that this is a requirements-based suite. End-to-end test, well, that's going to be a static suite in all likelihood. Now, again, they're just groups of test cases. Now, those suites have their own states. Now, they're not active and inactive like many of the states that we've seen so far. Test suites can be in planning, in progress, or completed. Okay. Now again, that tip Steve gave us, make sure you know these things. Now you can change those. In the plan tab, we can select the particular test suite, and then in the drop-down, in planning, in progress, and completed, and you'll see those little, you know, graphic indicators there next to each of them as well that can also greatly assist. It's possible for us to copy test suites. And again, we're going to do and certainly demonstrate some of these. But sometimes you need to create a test suite that's the same or similar to one you've already created in an earlier test plan. You remember when Steve went in there and created the test plan? He called it iteration 3. And he also demonstrated that there was iteration 1 and iteration 2. So unlike perhaps some of the more traditional test plans, our test plans today tend to be focused on the particular sprint or iteration that we're in. So instead of a long-running test plan of some months in duration, we have much shorter, quicker iterations to deal with. Okay? So as a result of that, the ability for us to copy test plans and test suites is quite important and significant. We're mostly focused on copying test suites in here. So Microsoft Test Manager allows you to just copy the test suite to the current plan. So it's kind of, you pull into the current suite, you don't push copy into the destination. Okay, that's just a concept there, and I'll demonstrate that to you. Once copied, you can then add or remove test cases as required. Copying a test suite does not create a duplicate copies of the test case in your team project. The existing test cases in the test suite that you're copying are just added to the new suite. Now, we're going to qualify that, and I think I've got it in a slide coming up. And then I think Steve
and I
both...
I'd love a demo if I can.
So you blow them off in the first module, and you jump in...
And then I'm going to steal a demo.
Nice. Steal a demo back. I'm sure we can accommodate that. So we've got copying, but we're also going to talk about cloning.
Okay.
All right, so
fair
I'll do
enough.
Cloning. How about I demonstrate cloning, you can have copy. You can do the TCM demo.
I'll do TCM. I'll do cloning, you do copy.
Okay.
Make sure you do know the difference. It can be confusing. Copying is that low, it's just kind of pointing to the same one, whereas cloning is making a complete duplicate of them. Now, there's reasons to copy and there's reasons to clone, and we'll dive into that as part of the demonstration. But want to make sure clone is that deep copy, which we'll get to.
Excellent.
Back at you.
Thanks, sir. So back to the slides then. Let's have a look at cloning a test suite. Cloning test suites is done using tcm.exe. These new test cases are copies of the test cases in your source test plan. And after the copy, you can edit the test cases in either plan without affecting the other. Cloning test suites is useful when you want to work on two differing releases simultaneously. The source and target suites must be in the same team project collection. Now, put a note there, that was a requirement for the release version. It was either, was it update one or post update one? One or the other?
I'm not sure.
That rule changed, but let's be very clear, for the purpose of the exam, the bottom holds completely true. That's all you need to know.
Yep.
All right. Let's have a look graphically at the difference between those. As Steve pointed out, you want to make sure that you're not confused by the differences. So when we copy, and this can be, I can see why people get confused here. When we copy from test plan A to test plan B, it's this, you know, here we have test case one, it is copied over here and it remains test case one.
So it's the same test case?
It is the same test
case. So if I modify it in one, it's modified in the other?
Yes.
Because it's the same one?
It is.
It's just point, okay.
Okay. When we look at cloning, that's a little different. When we clone from one test plan to another, it's a new test case. So now, when we copy one over here, it gets a new identifier. And any change I make here will not affect the source, will not affect the parent. Okay? Some very, very clear differences there. Okay? So I'm going to do a demonstration. I'm going to go in there and talk about creating these suites. We'll talk about creating a hierarchy of them, if you wish. We'll look at the three different types very clearly, and then we'll go in and we'll do a demonstration of both copying and cloning, and then Steve gets to butt in and he can do one of those demos as well. All right. That's payback for the time I gave you. Okay, that's fair. Okay, so let's switch across to one of the demos. Okay. So in my test plan, I'm going to go back to my contents. To be very clear, I'm on the planning tab at the top. Okay. Remember, just a quick look across the top there. Steve showed us our two activity centres, our testing centre and the lab centre, or as I like to call them, blue and green. And of course, if you download things like the free TestScribe utility, then you'll find that you actually get a third one appear here, and I like to call him grey. You can see I'm very creative in those names. The exam, it's pretty much blue.
Yes.
Yep.
Very much blue.
Okay. So in our testing center, you'll see we've got these four tabs at the top that Steve's pointed out, and we're still focusing very heavily on this plan tab now. I go to my contents, and you'll see in this particular test plan, we've already got a couple of suites created. So I'm going to go ahead and let's look at creating some more. So I'm going to choose, popping up the top there, that makes all the difference. So if I go back to iteration two up the top there, I can choose to create a what we'll call a static suite, a query-based suite, or a requirements-based suite. Now, they call this one out a little bit separate. Don't quite know why that's the case. Any guesses? Hypothesis?
I'm guessing that I like the fact that I test against requirements, that it's a separate one. I don't know about that.
Nah.
It's the same thing. It's just another suite type.
Yeah.
But they just make it easy because you can just click the one button. I don't know.
That must have been it.
Make it easy to do the right thing.
All righty. So I'm going to go ahead. Let's do that one first then.
Okay.
So I'm going to click Add Requirements. Now, be clear, we're adding a requirements-based suite. So when I select this, it's going to bring up this query. And the query simply says that, what are our requirement types or work items in the requirements category? I run the query. And down the bottom here, let's make that just a wee bit bigger. Not quite. Wow, I'm really dysfunctional with a mouse today. So here are all the requirements that I've got in this team project. I can go and choose this one. So let's say that we're going to look at some testing of, as a customer, I should be able to create a wish list of items that I want. I can go down here and say I want to add that requirement to the plan. And if you look up here, it's created a new suite for me. That little check mark there, that's an indicator for us that this is a requirements-based suite. Now, any test cases that I create, and we'll come to this in a moment, but if I add test cases in here, then they will automatically be linked to that particular requirement type. So it maintains that really, really important traceability for us. I can also go and let's create the other two as well. I can go up here and say I want to create a static suite. Now, a static suite is basically that folder analogy I gave you before. It's just a folder, I name it whatever I like, whatever makes contextual sense for me, and then I choose to put in whatever test cases I wish. So I could simply say shopping cart tests. Or I could go up here and say I want to create another one, and I could call it regression tests. After I move into the next iteration, it might make sense for me to pick these ones up and drop them into regression. And then I can go and add the requirements for the upcoming sprint and keep those in focus for me. There's a lot of things we can do to sort of manage these things well. So again, I've created two out of the three. Let's do the third. A query-based suite. Now, a query-based suite is based around a query, a filter. So first and foremost, it says for the current team project, where the work item type is a test case category type, and basically here are all of our fields in the work item. I can go in there and choose automation status equals not automated. So I only want the manual ones here. And we can basically work our way through the list, picking any of those that make sense to me. I might go and choose assigned to equals, and I'm currently logged on as Julia. So this would basically be Julia's manual tests or Julia's non-automated tests. Would be quite descriptive there. When I run the query, okay, there were nothing that matches that particular filter in the sample data. But if there was, you'd see those test cases down here. Okay. So I'll go ahead and create that test suite now. And, well, I'd like to believe that was intentional.
I think it is, because at this point, you can go and create a new test case out of thin air. And as long as it's assigned to Julia, it'll appear right there.
Yes, it will. The unintentional thing here was the hierarchy.
Ah.
Okay. So if I pick that up and drop it up the top here, I guess what I had expected or intended to be doing there was to be creating those all at the same top level. But, you know, conveniently, the very next thing I was going to talk about is creating those hierarchies.
Very convenient.
Exactly. So I might pick this one up and drop it in here. So as part of my regression tests, I can have a group of end-to-end tests.
Okay. Absolutely.
So you can end up with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of test cases to deal with and manage. So being able to organize them into these hierarchies, into these logical folders, is really, really important housekeeping.
I've got a question. On some of these, I noticed there was an order column on the left. Like you can see that you got which one is in which order over here. And on other test suites, for instance, the requirements test suite and the query-based test suite, you didn't have an order column.
Excellent.
So that leads me to believe, which indeed is the case, you can only order normal suites. Mm-hmm. So the normal suites are the only ones which contain an ordering capability. And there's a button at the top that says order. If you have one that's got a couple items in it, at the upper right, it says order, and you can rearrange them so that one comes before another one. Not sure why you want to do that, but it could be that they're related in some way or something like that. But they're the only ones that can have an order column.
Fantastic. Thank you, Steve.
So absolutely.
You'll actually see slides on that in the very next section. And my very next demonstration includes that, but by all means.
Dang it.
Jump in and add that now. Feel free. I will pay you back for that. My mind is already racing ahead to your next demo.
Oh, apologies.
War has started.
And oh,
bit,
I know.
Bit young in the
but
day.
But I've got one more.
You do?
I do. One thing that I know you couldn't show earlier when you talked about configurations is it possible to have a default configuration for a test plan, but a different default configuration for a test suite.
Why would you want to do that?
Because a test suite might be one that really is just attacking maybe some performance things, and so you're really going to focus on just delivering like the really hardcore stuff at the client that you need to run that's going to stress the back end. For an example, it's probably a bad one, but there might be cases where the default test suites need to be different by the default configurations need to be different from the test suite than from the test plan. Don't know if you were going to cover that.
I wasn't. This time, I appreciate the interruption.
Nice! And if you need to do that, if you pop back over to your slide deck, you'll notice that on any of these, you can select one, and the default configuration is simply right at the top, and you can specify the default configurations just for that one suite to be different from all the others.
Yeah. So we choose not to inherit it from its parent, so I can go in there and turn that off, and I can say for the end-to-end tests, we're only going to worry about running those on Windows Server 2008 and IE8.
Yep, I think so.
And I had forgotten to demonstrate that, so I appreciate that.
That's
certainly helpful.
You couldn't at the time because you talked about configurations, but you hadn't talked about test suites. It was a chicken and egg thing.
Yeah.
Chicken and egg thing.
I'll go ahead and save that. And that'll probably hurt me later in a demonstration when I forget that I've done that, but what the heck? All right, so we've seen the hierarchy. We've seen the three different types that we can do there very easily. In terms of our test suite states, if I just drop that back up here for now, you'll see those little icons down the far left-hand side. I can go and grab the shopping cart tests. And up here, you'll see that I can change the state. I can switch it back to in planning. I can say that it is in progress. Or I can say that it is now completed and we don't need to focus on those tests anymore. Okay? So changing the state of those test suites is quite straightforward. The next thing I want to do is I'm going to go through and let's go and grab what do I feel like. This button up the top here, create test suites by referencing existing test cases. Now when I select that, I'm currently in iteration 2 up the top here, so it gives me the opportunity to go back to iteration 1 or any other iteration. Now remember I said that when we do the copy, we can go in there and we basically pull from other test plans. Unfortunately, iteration 1 doesn't have any suites inside it, which would have been really helpful for me, but I could go and choose a particular suite there, click create, and it would go ahead and create those and copy them forward. Okay, now that's available to us through the UI. Now, Steve, you mentioned you wanted to have a look at, you had a TCM demo.
I would. And if you pop it over, I can happily take a quick peek at that. I've got a couple. Oh, hey, we're already over. Mine looked a lot like yours. So for copying those test suites from another plan, that copying, again, is just a reference. And so you can have two separate ones in the same plan. So notice, this test case 40, 41, 42, and 43, these test cases are in the end-to-end tests, but they also are in, like for instance, this suite-based test. In this case, same one, I've copied them over, but I have to reference them separately. So if one passes, I still have to run it in the other one to get it to pass. So in order to have them both passing, I need to have them both run. Or, of course, you can right-click and tell it that it's passed. But let's take a look at this. Iteration 2, these end-to-end tests, I think, are rocking. We need those end-to-end tests. But unfortunately, when I get to iteration 3, things have changed. Now, we've already delivered those, but got some new requirements coming out. Those things we need to evolve separately because those test cases are going to change against version N plus 1. But I still need to be able to run those tests in the current version that's running on the server. So let's go ahead and do that. And I do that with something called TCM, the Test Case Manager. And I'm going to put a WAC question mark, and you can see all of the various areas that you can do. So for instance, I have a bug field mapping, configs. I can list all of my configurations, list all my test plans. I can run things right from here. The one that I'm going to care about, however, is test is suites, TCM suites, which is going to look at those test suites. So if we go in here, we'll type TCM suites, WAC question mark, we'll get a little bit more detail on the suites. Now, I want to scroll up just a bit, and then we'll zoom back in, and we can see what we have here to look at. And you'll see with suites, we can clone here, and we can list the suites. And you can list suites based on queries, etc. But notice the clone. We pass in the suite ID we want to clone, the destination we want to clone it to, and we've got this really cool thing here called override field name, or override field name, or override field, and then we can override that field with something else. Here's our destination team project, destination work item type even. Lots of things we can change.
Wow.
I know. It's an amazing tool. Now, it's so amazing that typing it in as part of a demo would take a long time. So I'm going to scroll up where I've already typed in
something I prepared earlier,
the WAC collection and the WAC team project. I just didn't want to have to type all those in front of everybody. But here we can look at the actual list itself when we run. And when we zoom into that, you can go ahead and see where we have all of these test suites. Now I've got very few, but I've got that end-to-end test, that number 6 test here. It's ID number 6. You have to check out the ID. And I want to copy those end-to-end tests into my iteration 3. But because those tests will evolve separately, I need to clone them. What's more, they're based on a requirement, and the requirement is going to itself change in this next release, so I want to clone that requirement. So let's go ahead and take a look at how we might do that. And here, we'll notice that we're going to add a lot more stuff in. We have this clone requirements section. And let me just zoom again, right back in again. And we have this place where we're going to clone the requirements. You'll notice it right down here. We have the suite ID we're going to copy and the destination suite ID. I'm going to change this to 7. And the other thing is we can override this field. Iteration path equals tailspin toid iteration 1. We'll change that to iteration 3. That'll go ahead and change it to reassign it. And you can override anything in here, really. So let's go ahead and make those changes. We're going to go copy 6. And the destination suite ID, we'll use 7. And the iteration path, we want to make sure that it's now assigned to everything assigned to iteration 3. Let's hit enter. And we've made that copy. Now, the funny thing is about iteration 3 that I do have to let you know, that end-to-end thing had no related requirements to it. So what I need to do now is make another copy of something that had a requirement. So like, for instance, iteration or ID number 3, as a customer, I should be able to remove items from my shopping cart. I'm going to copy that suite ID over as well. So I'll copy that suite ID over. And you can see it here, copying suite ID 3 over to iteration 3. Enter, and it will now make that copy. I'm going to go back over. We no longer need this because the copy is being run. In this context here, let me hit refresh and zoom right on in. Woohoo! Woohoo is right. This gives me the two things as a customer and end-to-end tests copy. Lets me know it's a copy. I can rename those potentially. And if I click on one of them, like the end-to-end tests, notice over here that the IDs are different than they were before. Where they were 40 before for this first one, they're now this. Just to prove that, I'm going to open it up and show you here with the links. It's linked back to 40, that related test case, and here it's the clone. That's how you clone those things with TCM.
Awesome.
It is absolutely awesome. One last quick look as we pop over. I want to show you this one. This is the clone here. Here we have a customer can remove items from the shopping cart. If I open it up and I look at all links, you'll notice it's linked to this test case that it was a copy from, but also it's linked to a new user story, user story 65. And if we open that one up, that's the test case here that it was cloned. So I mean the requirement that was cloned, so that we can also clone that requirement. I'm going to talk about this later, but I have to show one thing. There's this nice little thing that says test cases. If I click on it, it shows all of the test cases that are testing this user story. Requirements are related to test cases through that link. You can also view them this way and see the tested user stories that direction.
That looks pretty good. So could you offer some guidance to the viewers as to, you know, how much of TCM should they be aware of in terms of their exam preparation?
For the exam preparation, I would very much be preparing like the suites, like we just showed you. That's an important one. I'd also be able to understand what's available in things like configurations and plans as well. Both of those are looking at the big type of planning picture while you're building it. Those are kind of the critical ones, things that would be used more simply as people go through. So look at those, especially suites, but also understand your configurations and your plans.
Okay, so but you wouldn't necessarily dig right into all of the switches on TCM.
No. I would not dig into all the switches, not at all. But I would want to know just the basic overlying thing. Pull up each one of those commands with a whack question mark and read the instructions. Once you've read it and kind of understand what it is, you're pretty much good.
Excellent. Fantastic.
Thanks for letting me give that demo. I love going to the command line.
You're very welcome. Very welcome. Okay, let's move into the next and final session for this particular module, although I think Steve's already given you about half of it.
No!
Configuring test suites. It's all right. Payback's coming. Okay, so what the study guide says, in terms of configuring test suites, we want to talk about assigning testers, selecting configurations, including setting the default configurations there, which is really helpful.
And there it is.
Oh, look, ordering test cases in a test suite. Isn't that wonderful? You must have had a premonition, Steve. All right, and I'm going to show you all of the reports straight after this.
That's one of my sections.
All right, so the assigned to, I want to call out the assigned to as being a little different from what you're used to. If I go into, say, a typical work item type, if I go into a task and I assign that task to you, Steve, what's the assumption? What's the message there?
Something I need to do?
Yeah, I want you to do it.
Yep.
Now, test cases and tasks are a little different. A task, typically, when the task is done, it's done. We want to maintain that historical record that we did it, but that's it. Now, test cases are a little different. With a test case, you don't just test once and it's done. It'd be nice, and it'd be quick, but probably not that thorough. Test cases typically need to be run over and over and over again. If we're getting a new build from the developers, you know, nightly, then we're often running those tests over and over and over. So assigned to or assigning a test to a tester can mean some different things. So I just wanted to set the scene and call that one out as being just a little bit different. Okay, so let's take a look at that. Okay, and actually, damn, there's one more slide.
Ordering test cases.
See, did you like a little segue straight into the demo slide and then that popped up? Those ordering test cases are haunting me. All right, so let's talk about that and I'll roll them both into the demo. I can't blame anyone else. I did the slides. I can't say that it was a surprise, really. Okay, you might want to be able to list and run your tests in a specific order. Now, as a rule of thumb, if I say ordering tests, that's, or if I hear ordering tests, that usually rings alarm bells for me. It scares me. Now, this is a little different, though. So the example is provided here. You might want to be able to run the simplest tests first. You know, if any of those tests fail, then, you know, subsequent tests in your test suite would be blocked. So, you know, being able to go in there and run a couple of quick end-to-ends there, making sure they're all happy and healthy before drilling down could just be a very logical time saver for us. So we'll see that, as Steve pointed out, we can't necessarily order all of the types. In fact, you can only order static test suites. And I'll go through and demonstrate that for you now. Okay, so I'm going to switch across to the demo machine. And, okay, a couple of things to show. So if I go in back to, have I got a test case somewhere? There we go, there's a test case. If I open that test case up and have a look at this assigned to, that's got a slightly different meaning from, say, an assigned to on a task. This assigned to, I usually try and tell people to think of it as the, you know, as the go-to person for the test case. I'd almost conceptually change that word to back to owner, or author's probably even better.
Ah.
Okay, so you see assigned to, but I want you to think author. If we've got any questions about this, if perhaps we want to go and change this, if we want to ask the person that authored it, that's probably where I'm going to go and have a look. Okay, so that's part of the concept I want you to think of. When it comes time to going and wanting to run these things, though, remember, the person that runs the test, given that we're going to run this test potentially 50, 20, you know, five times or more, that could change. So if I go and have a look here, you'll see who the tester is when we go and want to do this run. But I can go back to my test plan. I can go into assign, and I can go and choose who I want to assign to run this particular test. I might go and choose Abu for now, and I'll save that assignment. So you'll see here that that's currently assigned to Abu as the tester, and that's me conveying to Abu that I would like him to go and run that test, please. Now I can go over here and I can say that I want to go and assign testers for all tests. And that gives me a nice list here, and I can work my way down, just divvying up the work between my available testers. For now, I'll simply say, don't save. Now, you've seen us look at different configurations, but I can go in here, I can have a look, you know, at what this particular test is, get a good feel for it. I can go back here and say I want to go into my configurations. And currently, we've only got this single configuration, Windows Server 2008 and IE8 selected. I can say view all configurations. I can go down here and I can also say, well, for this particular test case, I'd like to run it against two, please. I'll click apply and close that. Now that's test case 43. When I switch across to do my testing now, you'll see that 43 will appear twice because I gave it two configurations. We need to run it once for Windows Server 2008 and IE8, and we also need to run the same test in this configuration, SOE4. So assigning those configurations is quite straightforward. Okay, now we can set configurations right down to the individual test case. This one test case needs to be run or tested against three or four configurations, but I can have the defaults for either the suite or the test plan be quite different if I needed to do that. Normally, as opposed to broadening the scope, you tend to be narrowing the scope, is what I usually find in my experience. So quite, you know, broad at the high level, but then when you get to the individual tests, then it may only make sense for some of those tests to work in a limited number of configurations. Steve also pointed out, so let me just take a step back from here, back to plan. If I was to go and choose, and I don't think I've got any test cases in any of my static suites, which I don't. So for the interest of a quick demo, here's clearly a quality test case, SEDGS. That'll make sense to someone, I'm sure. I'll go and create another one, and let's move my hand up the keyboard to the QWERTY level. There we go. Two uber quick random test cases just for the purpose of ordering. Now, as a static test suite, I can go over here and you'll see that they appear in the order I created them or added them. I can click the order button. And that allows me to come down here and I can simply change. I say that, look, I want this one to be the second one, this one to be the first. I've only got two, so I can only really swap the order in this example. I can click update order, and that's exactly what it's done. Now that would allow me to choose the simpler ones first or the quick end-to-end ones first, whatever my goal or purpose was in doing that. And I click apply changes and you'll see that they're now switched around. If I do choose any of the other types, notice that order does not appear there though. Okay. So I think that's pretty much the second part of that module done. Was there anything you'd like to add, Steve? Or?
Nope.
I think we...
I think that's it.
I think they deserve another break.
I think they do.
We'll see you in 10 minutes.
When we come back, we're actually going to dive in and create some test cases with test steps.
Fantastic.
All right. See you then.
See you then.